futures. What is he? I forget which. I forget which derivative or which whatever. What area he covers, but to me, it does feel like there's an untapped market or potential to get people that are players to utilize their investment in the game on the breeding side. And I know, for instance, that Billy Koch and the team at Little Red Feather, they ventured into some breeding partnership and pinhook partnership arenas. And I'm a little surprised that format hasn't ventured into this arena. Is that practical?
Yeah, it may well be. We don't even know as we're speaking right now, things are happening that we don't even know about, different people. And I think it really gets down to the part you pointed out, whether they have a mare or a stallion, there seems to be desire to natural to, whether if it's a stallion to buy some mares to support your stallion, or if it's a mare to think about breeding it instead of selling it, particularly if it's, not one of your top mares. So I think, I think there are more people in the game that are actually expanding, and I think the pricing is right for them to do it, because there's prices dropped this year, whether yearlings or broodmares and weanlings, and I think prices will probably drop again this coming year. And as if you go back and look at the last big crisis with the economic meltdown between 2007 and 2009, when that happened and it flushed a lot of people out of the game and prices dropped, you had other entities come in, notably an entity like SF Bloodstock, and they bought. They were bullish, and they really capitalized on the prices, the pricing, and built up their portfolios. So, I know that there are a lot of people that are actually buying more right now. We had a client that, was breeding 15 mares a year, and he's now increased his holdings to over 40 mares because of this price drop. He actually mentioned to me in passing, as far as the tax code is concerned, that this year is beneficial for write-offs as well. So I'm not really familiar with the details of that, but that could be something that's playing a part as well. And then you have, like I said, you have people. We just mentioned people like Larry Best, who are just starting into the breeding business. But you have people like Gary and Mary West, for example, that have, stallions like Game Winner and Maximum Security and West Coast that stud. And they're increasing their holdings to support those stallions, too. And that's a case, of people going that route. It's hard to tell as we're going through it, but what exactly is taking place, whether there are new people coming in right now, and who's expanding and who's decreasing assets, quote unquote. But after a big upheaval there's always a shakeup, and there's always I like to compare it to like the kaleidoscope. You shake it up, and the pattern gets rearranged. And so we're in that process of being shaken up right now. And in the ensuing years, we'll see a new pattern. And that'll be numbers, metrics will guide us as to what's happened as well.
Yeah, and it always, I figured you'd reference, you know, the economic upheaval. And we, I remember talking, you know, coming out of that about how, I don't want to call the people that jumped into the marketplace opportunists, but there is always, you know, with those ebbs and flows, there are always people that recognize the scenario as an opportunity to buy low and wait out selling high. I mean, we're not talking, this is an arena of, let's be honest. I mean, it's an arena of people that are flush with money and they can afford to wait out the downturn.
Yeah. And particularly right now, you know, it's a interesting situation because even though we've had a terrible economic downturn with COVID and small businesses and unemployed people and the whole malaise, right? One aspect of this economy, which is the very small part that affects the rich, the wealthiest people, the stock market, has continued to make money for these people. So they have actually been fairly immune to the downturn. They're flush with cash. And so they can actually expand, and new people in that sphere who want to come in have cash to do it as well. So there are correlations as to, you know, what segments are going to grow based on that, what segments are going to be impacted more, you know, and that top 1%, your billionaire class, it's safe to say has actually grown wealth this year, while, you know, everybody else has declined in net worth.
Couple of recent topics too, Sid, to fold into the discussion. I don't know if you were able to hear anything from yesterday, but we pulled there were two things that came up somewhat out of the blue. One was from Friday, and the appearance of a piebald 2-year-old named Saluki that turned up in a New York bred maiden race on the grass, and it got me to reach out for Dr. Alday to talk about, you know, the genetic mutations and colorations. And that was kind of fun. And then it occurred to me to ask you about the family from where Saluki hails, because the female family involves Airdrie and you know, a stallion that I, until this topic cropped up, I had never heard of. Saluki is out of a mare by the name of Colorful Seattle, who was by a Sabino paint thoroughbred, you know,
Airdrie Apache.
Yes. Tell us about this. Tell us how often this occurs and what, you know, what's your experience along these lines?
Well, I remember Airdrie Apache, and he had quite a, you know, following, and, you know, was actually breeding horses at some farm, you know, where they breed these, you know, colorful horses. That horse, Airdrie Apache, was, I remember him. He was very distinctively marked as well. And it's interesting you should bring this up, because his dam was a registered white mare. And so that we're talking about Airdrie Apache, right?
Yes.
Airdrie Apache, who was bred by Barry Jones, was out of a mare by the name of Not Quite White, who was actually a white mare, registered white. And that's where it all springs from. And it just so happened that this past weekend, I'm sure you saw this in Japan.
Yes.
You had this white thoroughbred filly win a Group 1 race. Was the first white thoroughbred to win a group where, I believe. And she won a race in Japan. And that's from this white line, another white line of mares that's been cultivated in Japan from U.S. stock. So that's basically what that's all I can tell you about. But Airdrie Apache, I remember him quite distinctly, and you know he was used for breeding, paints and multicolored horses.
He stood at Painted Desert Farm. Is where he made his mark, and from there I'm putting up the link, as they call him, likely was and likely still is the world's leading sire of white and colored thoroughbreds. Airdrie Apache sired a large number of and has proven to be a prolific source of white and paint thoroughbreds, the first being Silver Mystique, the world's first ever white thoroughbred, which was sold, people might recall, at Fasig, going back a few years. And Arctic View was another one, a white male that was sold at Keeneland. And there's been... It feels like a novelty, but the Japanese winner over the weekend, wins a Group 1. I mean, that's a kind of a breakthrough. It's kind of a breakthrough effort.
It really is, and her line has been pretty prominent and very popular over there. What was her name again? Something like Zoe Dashi.
I got Sabino on the brain because of Airdrie. Hold on, I'll pull it up.
pull it up I think she's from a mare called Yuka-chan, and that was a white mare. From thinking about the same mare, Yuka-chan was a white mare, and
Sodashi.
So let me see who her dam was. Soda.
Soda. Sodashi.
Yeah. Oh yeah, boy, Sodashi. Yeah. So let's see who her dam was.
There's a ton.
Oh, okay. So her name was a mare named Buchiko, but it goes back to that Yuka-chan line, because that I was talking to you about. Buchiko was a white mare, and Steve, this line goes back to the American mare Wave Win by Topsider, and. Wave Wind had been purchased and ended up going to Japan, and when she was bred to Sunday Silence, she produced a white mare called Shira Yuki Hime, and that mare is the second dam of Sodashi. And also the font of the white breed there, because if you recall that that mare I told you about, Yuka-chan, she is another white mare, and her dam is that mare, Shira Yukime, and the next dam is Wave Wind, who we were talking about. So that's that line of white horses in Japan. They all traces this group of mares traces this topsider mare Wave Wind, a foal of 91, and it's interesting that this filly won this Group One race, and I believe Alan Porter wrote about this mare Sadashi and her white genes. Alan has gotten into alleles and genes and whatnot, and he had a very interesting article in the Blood Horse yesterday on Sadashi and the genetic markers that led to the whiteness, the white coloration. And I think he's tracked some of the genes in it. And I just sent him a text this morning telling him it's a real interesting piece. And as I'm on the phone with you right now, he just texted back, thanks. Which reminded me of that, his article. But I would recommend people read that piece as well.
I'm just putting up the picture of Airdrie Apache and Sadashi. And I also want to fold into this conversation the other topic from yesterday, Sid, that was a bit of a revelation with Steve Anderson, because I brought up the two rich quarter horse races at Los Al Saturday and Sunday, the $2 million Futurity and the $600,000 Champion of Champions. And Steve launched into you had this these sort of cousins somewhat the two apolitical named winners of the races, and Steve launched into some heritage on the stallions that were involved.
Yeah,
and he actually revealed that Mattoli apparently is going to be used with insemination of quarter horse mares.
Yeah, it's something that's been done with thoroughbreds before. Obviously, so many thoroughbreds are in the pedigrees of quarter horses. But remember, Stormcat was used that way too.
That's right. I forgot about that. That's right.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Who was the sire of? Was there something to the sire of these two winners that we're talking about?
Well, there was. Hold on. There was apolitical. One was Apolitical Blood, who was the sire of Apolitical Patty, and Apolitical Blood himself was a son of Apolitical Jess. And I think what
is it
Steve
all one word?
No, it's two words, but apolitical is one word, and then Apolitical Blood and Apolitical Jess. And I think Steve tied it back to Favorite Trick and Favorite Trick's involvement as a quarter horse stallion stud.
Yeah, that makes sense because the Los Al owner and Artie Hubbard and all those guys, Johnny Jones of Walmac were Favorite Trick stud. They were all big in the quarter horse business. And Favorite Trick was used with quarter horses. D. Hubbard, Johnny Jones.
Right.
All those guys. So that makes a lot of sense. Sometimes I'll look at a quarter horse's pedigree, and it almost seems like, nine-tenths of the horse, some of these pedigrees are thoroughbreds.
Is the breeding season how different is the breeding season different? Do you know with quarter horses? What do they have the same timing as?
I think it's the same timing with thoroughbreds, and of course, obviously, artificial insemination is used, and there was a mare, Steve, that years ago I had raced, And I sold it to a quarter horse guy. And a few years later, when I went back and I looked at her, I noticed that she had had two foals the same year, one a thoroughbred and one a quarter horse. Well, what happened was, you know, what they do is they take embryo transfers. So they used an embryo transfer with her, and were able to get a quarter horse while she had a natural cover and had thoroughbred.
So not only do
they do artificial insemination with the stallion, but they also do it with embryo transfers with the mare.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. There's actually, I'm going to put a link up for those that are interested in this. Here's a piece from the AQHA website, the Quarter Horse Association, Breeding a Thoroughbred to a Quarter Horse, What to Know. And here's a piece from November of last year, in fact, on my birthday. I guess Into Mischief is available to quarter horse breeders.
Well, that makes a lot of sense because Into Mischief and Natalia are at the same farm.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Here's an article. When's this from? This is from 2013. Joe Neville's, while he was at DRF, thoroughbred sires make a mark on quarter horses, and it has got a little bit of a backstory. And in fact, he talks about Favorite Trick. Stormcat and Aladar also. You mentioned Stormcat, but Aladar, yeah. I didn't know. Amazing.
Yeah, it really is. You know, Aladar, at that time of Calumet ownership, the guy, Lundy, was, you know, NASCAR, quarter horses, and, you know, good old boy. So that kind of makes sense, too. Not to generalize, or certainly don't mean it in any offensive way, but in terms of, how that could have happened.
I'll send these links. I think people are going to enjoy it, obviously. That's my measuring stick when it comes to this in these conversations. If it's something, it seems to me, if it's something I'm interested in or curious about, that people will enjoy, you know, reading more, because this is an area that and this piece from Joe Neville's actually is very good. There's some interesting quotes, including this, where Fred Alexander, ANA Ranch in Anthony, New Mexico. Nowadays, it seems like nobody wants to stick their neck out and do it. Back in the 60s and 70s, people would experiment with thoroughbreds. They just don't seem to do it anymore. But with horses like, Matoli and Into Mischief, you would think that some people would be, would be willing to try. You know who would be fun to talk this with would be Baffert and Lucas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. They're from that whole era of quarter horse transferring to thoroughbreds.
Right, and I think I think Bob Baffert's dad, I think, bred some himself too. So the chief. So
we've happened on a we wandered into a topic we didn't know existed. I literally, mm-hmm. 36 hours ago.
Very, very interesting.
Too fun.
I'll definitely go back to read your links too.
I'll put them up, and I've got at least three things here. One from AQHA, one from this piece with that Joe wrote at DRF, and then there's a third one too that talks the one from Bloodhorse. Let me see, when that was from November. I'm curious who wrote this one, Into Mischief and Matoli, Christine Oser. wrote this last year. So, all right. Well, everybody's got their walking papers on this topic. Sid, before we wrap up, we got just a few minutes to the top of the hour, so we'll close out the hour with you. Some final thoughts and thank yous and your acknowledgments for 2020, for your work, Thoroughbred Consultants, of course, and 510-490-1111, but talk a little bit about your team and your year overall. It's been emotional.
It's been a challenging year for everybody this year. We've got a great team a staff of nine, and Roger Lyons and I early on, we made this with everything with the industry upside down. We have a board, and one of the guys on it is a financial guy, and he was giving us advice about, maybe you need to, lay off three people to try to get through this and whatnot. But, we kind of made a decision that we're not going to do that. All of us are going to either make it or not. And, that was a really good feeling to do, and it was the right thing to do. And, we didn't cut anybody. We just took a big risk, rolled dice, and kept going. And fortunately, our clients were viable from at all levels, small through big, and we had a lot of support from them. And we went through the year, and we didn't have to lay anybody off. Everybody stayed. And, it was at the point where what I'm trying to point out is that either we were all going to sink or we were going to make it. And so we're thankful as the year comes to a close that everybody is doing okay for us. And so that's, I understand that it's been terrible for a lot of people, but we were able to get through this year, and for our immediate staff and the company, we're headed into the new year, and again, we don't know what's going to happen, but we're thankful that we made those decisions and worked together. So I guess that's the big personal thing I can say about it.
Well, absolute value and invaluable conversations we hear from so many breeders of different sizes, and it's well, the time is always well spent, and the people I've learned so much, Sid, from from your visits, and we thank, of course, Hill and Dale, John Sikora, and his team, and Jared Burdine, and everybody. And I've been promising John, and John's been promising me a visit for literally for 2 months. So
I would got it pinned down.
he it's funny. John has gotten funny about visiting because he says that I wind him up. It's like with Satish. Satish, I always accused me of winding him up. But John says, I get on a roll and I start saying things that that he shouldn't, that he thinks he shouldn't say. But that's not the case at all. I will hear from John soon. So thanks to Hill and Dale, and looking forward to a 2021 season with their lineup headed by Curlin, and the emerging, obviously McLean's Music, everything that's gone on with him, and Good Magic off seemingly to a great start, and so much more. Violence having a big year. So we'll send our thanks to the Hill and Dale team and the new farm, which we're looking forward to seeing. And Sid,
Ghost
Sapper, that's right, the Adena partnership. And it's funny because John has really made that seemingly work, the deal with Ramsey's, with Ramsey Farm, and bringing Kitten's Joy over and kind of picking up the marketing of Kitten's Joy. Yeah. So John has had experience doing that.
Yeah, he's really, you know, he's really built up his stallion roster with some really good proven horses and some young guys coming up. And he's a fun guy to talk to because, you know, he really doesn't mince his words. And, you know, he's just, you know, he's like a tough guy. It's a breath of fresh air actually talking to a guy like him. And I've been talking to him, you know, for over 30 years. I've seen his, you know, he's like the same guy back then as he is now.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. Forward thinking and a unique presence in the breeding industry.
Yeah, John will just pop out stuff, and that's why if you get him on here, I think it will be an enjoyable listen. You know, what he's worried about saying too much is actually what makes it worth listening to.
Exactly. You know? That's exactly right. That was always what the hallmark of Satish's, whatever it was, five, six, 7 years with me. And you know, Satish, there was no filter. No filter at all.
And you need that too. You know, you really need that because it keeps you on your toes. I mean, I called John a few weeks ago about something, and he said, "Oh, what? You didn't see that in the TDN?" And then he said, "What do? Just look at the TDN when you write an article."
That's it. There you go. That's John.
I recorded. Well, your phone number and your new farm's website isn't working. And then he said, "Yeah, it's working." And then we got into a little boxing match about that.
It's the greatest. Finally, Sid, best wishes to Cece and Joe. Thank you very much.
And have a great time with the extended family coming down. And enjoy the 2 weeks because, you know, if you know me, you know, I don't just say this kind of stuff, but really, the show's been fantastic. And, you know, particularly this year with some tough topics, you weren't afraid to talk about them, and actually, you let me talk about some stuff too. So, you know, I appreciate, it's a stand-up thing you did. And like I said, you know, you're the only guy I go on the radio with. So I'm happy to say that.
I greatly appreciate it. And, you know, my respect and admiration for you and the way you've, tried to stand up and be a voice that not everybody wants to hear, but you have a platform or a forum, you do what you know feels right. So that's the origin. Sid, thank you. Better days are coming.
Yep, thank you, Steve.
Sid Fernando. Let's take a break. And hour three, Ed DeRose is going to join us. We got Seth coming up as well, and we'll do some handicapping undoubtedly, and we'll get some urine thoughts from Ed and from Seth back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Talking to the biggest names in the sport of kings, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Christmas in jail, Christmas in jail, had a little too much to drink. Ain't got no bail, ain't got no bail, and I'm spending New Year's Eve in the clink. I was in the wrong lane, feeling no pain, souped my car to 75. Ran right into, you can guess who, and they say I'm lucky to be alive.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
They're singing down the street while everybody's having Christmas turkey. They give me bread and water to eat. Christmas in jail, Christmas in jail. Wore my shoes out pacing the floor. Got rocks in my head, I wish I was dead. You gonna drink and drive no more.
There you go. Happy New Year. The youngsters and the immortal Christmas in Jail. And I remember early on when we introduced Christmas in Jail, one of our friends from Derby Trail wrote, thanks. I had the kids in the car, and now they're singing Christmas in Jail, and their mother wants to know, where did they learn this? So we've introduced this to a multiple generations. Ed DeRosa, good morning.
Good morning.
What's your, I think I've asked you this before, what are some of your Christmas song favorites?
Let's see. Now I'm drawing a blank on the name. Elton John, was it Step Into Christmas?
Yeah, I think so.
Definitely love that one. And growing up, my mom, and I admit, don't mind him either. He did a Jim Steinman song, so that always earns a spot in my heart. But my mom's crazy for Barry Manilow. So we had the Barry Manilow Christmas CD going when we decorate the tree and stuff. And, so I always appreciate hearing his dulcet tones around the holidays.
Well, I think you're younger than me, but not by much. The growing up, I suppose we used to not that we had Christmas music in our house. Believe me, we didn't. my father happens to be. My mother didn't mind it. My father would drive him nuts. He did not care. He's never cared for the Christmas music genre, which is kind of funny that I'd love it the way I do. I kind of grew up in that Andy Williams. With that, I would think Andy Williams maybe.
Mel Torme.
Listen, Mel Torme is one of the great jazz vocalists of not just our lifetime, but of any lifetime. I mean, Mel Torme has also got the greatest nickname. He may have the greatest nickname ever, Velvet Fog. I mean, that is
a fantastic nickname.
The Velvet Fog and the Denora Greyhound are about as about as great the Nick pair of nicknames. I those might be my two favorites.
And my generation got introduced to him through Judge Stone and Night Court.
Oh, well, absolutely, Harry, oh my God, what's Anderson? Harry Anderson, yeah. He absolutely revered. Mel Torme would show up. If you're my age or older, it was Dick Van Dyke's 95th birthday over the weekend. Torme used to show up on sitcoms. In the late '60s, I can remember him having, these sort of walk on, written into the script, whether it was on Lucy or there were some places where Mel Torme would just sort of pop up, and he was sure. always welcome, right?
We did Seinfeld.
Oh my God! I completely forgot that. You know, now you're going to make me pull up IMDb. He had to be plenty old at that time, right?
Yeah, mid-90s.
Yeah.
I'm not sure his age, but yeah, he was at a benefit, and Kramer had some medicine, or I forget why, but you know, Kramer was acting as if he had some neat special needs, perhaps, and Mel Torme had him seated right next to him.
You know what? This is amazing. He was only 73 when he died in 1999.
Mm. Yeah, that's young.
I'm very surprised by that, and I'm just here's the filmography, and you got me. Well, he's on a million Christmas shows. Wow, he was. They used that must have been a tape somehow that they look at this. Since his death, he's been used a million times somehow, and they're bringing him back. I don't know if it's holograms or what. This is amazing, actually. How many appearances that I guess they're just using. They're using the music. It's tough to differentiate. But I want to go back to the. Here we go. Here's the 60s and the 80s. The Lucy Show, two episodes. I knew I saw him on Lucy. Absolutely had seen him. The Danny Kaye Show, the Danny Thomas Show. I mean, well, those are all predictable. Wow.
Sonny and Cher?
Probably. Yeah, that makes sense. Kenny and Dolly with Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton mm-hmm. together and Muppet Family Christmas. That's right. That he was in that.
Did he ever do Saturday Night Live?
Boy, that's a great question. That's a great question. Not that I see, but wow, this is amazing. Actually, there's Night Court. Seven episodes he was in of Night Court. That Harry Anderson. Well, Harry Anderson had a picture of him in his office, right? On
yeah.
his desk.
Oh, yeah. That was definitely a in-show gag for as long as I remember. The show premiered before I was watching TV, but I always remember that being part of the shtick.
Well, there's no shortage of in-show gags here. there's some shtick that never gets old on this show. Well, Ed, I guess we got to do what we came here to do.
Give the people what they want.
Well, that we are. We're talking. You and I kicking the Mel Torme gong around. The what? Let me get your 2020 retrospective first and foremost.
Well, certainly, for me, I'm never gonna. I mean, like all of us, the type of year I think we kind of define when generations start, like kind of hear about. Kids who remember 9/11, Challenger explosion, Kennedy assassination. I mean, this seems like one of those generational years in that regard. And racing, to me, certainly is a big storyline because it never stopped. And obviously, it was never going to stop from taking care of the horses and, that the agricultural perspective of that. But there wasn't a day that went by that there wasn't some live racing on U.S. soil, and it was talked about it before, but to me is a huge testament to the people who put on the show and, of course, the horses. And, not the year I think any of us wanted, and for a lot of reasons, but racing did come together and make the most of it. Did what we could to keep people employed and entertained, which is another part of this that I don't think should be lost. Hopefully some people discovered racing through that how fun it can be to gamble on it and the handicapping puzzle and cheer on these horses. So some lemonade, but, you know, it'd be impossible to put too much of a shine on it. I feel like it's been a devastating year for a lot of people, and my heart goes out to them, especially in the holiday season.
Yeah, well said. We all had to, you know, just make whatever necessary adjustments, and you know, that included, you know, Sid talked about powering through with his staff. You know, we can mention that, you know, despite literally no revenue for, you know, 90 days maybe, you know, your team, everybody, you know, everybody tightened the belt and you know, and took a reduction in salaries. I mean, there were so many things that just quietly and that everybody, you know, just dealt with and you know, made whatever sacrifices were necessary.
Yeah.
I mean, at least reasonable people made the sacrifices that, you know, in deference to, you know, those around them.
And, you know, sort of the better part of valor is I felt like, you know, in a game where you a lot of times do need to tout your successes and it's fun to puff your chest, and that's the nature of Parimutuel. But I did feel like this industry, there wasn't a lot of peacocking when it came to rolling up the sleeves and getting done what needed to be done. It got done and we kept going where it was allowed to, and kept the lights on where things were really at a minimum, but it did seem like there was some humbleness and that we were in it together, even among competition. So hopefully that's something that, you know, the spirit of will continue into 2021.
Well, all things considered, the racing was very good, and you know, we're gonna be doing some voting, obviously, you know, after we get opening day of Santa Anita in the books on the 26th, the week from Saturday, the last ones of the year. I don't expect I haven't done all my horse work yet. I don't know if it's going to impact. I guess I should speak too soon until we get those. Until we get that close, but you know, I talked about this yesterday. I don't know if you had a chance to hear anything of the show yesterday, but you know, I riffed on particularly on Gary Barber as owner, where I think he stands out. But you know, the major categories, you know, everybody, you know, kind of came to the fore, and what was interesting, Ed, is how many divisions ended up getting definition that at the beginning of the year were kind of you know, amorphic. They really didn't have any shape, particularly the filly and mare sprint division, which looked bereft, and then it ended up becoming one of the best divisions of the season, and the older horses too.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you had told me Improbable was going to be our champion older male, not even at the start of the year, but after that initial loss at Oaklawn, I would have been exasperated. But no doubt in my mind, he's going to get that statue. Female sprinter, which, you know, definitely some years, and I'm as big a Unique Bella fan as there's been, but it still blows me away that she's an Eclipse winner in that category without having beaten Elder. But this was a year that, you know, by the Breeders' Cup, there were legitimate chances, and they all faced each other. Obviously, if Serengeti Empress or Bell's the One had won, they'd be the champion. Gamine left no doubt, though. So it's clear cut after what was a really fun division with some really stellar races. I would say that the counterpart, though, the male sprinter, is probably the toughest division for me. You know, I generally lean toward the Breeders' Cup winner when there's just kind of so many, but it's probably the category I'll spend the most time with, just because I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'll be printing out the PPs later, actually, because I had trouble getting them to come up yesterday, and but now they have come up, and I'm looking forward to it. It's one of the things I end up always doing, you know, during the holiday time off. I have to mention, the word just came, Eric Hamelbeck, letting me know about Awesome Again, who passed away late yesterday, apparently. And, I had not, had not seen this.
Yeah, I certainly hadn't. I've been celebrating Ghost Zapper on the Twitter machine the last week or so. So that's, pretty good stamp on the breed of Warner Breeders Cup Classic, and then went on to sire a horse like that.
Well, we will certainly. And it's boy, the timing of this is. Not surprising per se, but it hits me that earlier today, just because I had talked about old friends and with Roger Brueggemann's death, and I said to myself, I haven't had Michael Blowen visit in ages, and I didn't see him usually. A Derby week or Derby 2 weeks, we get a chance to see Michael either at Churchill or at the farm, and even Breeders' Cup week didn't see him. So I thought to myself, I really should get Michael Blowen, and here's another reason. And we'll have Eric Hamelbeck, completely tied. It's Awesome Again. Wow. Always hard. I always, whenever the big names, when we lose a big name along these lines, I always think of Shug and how stoic Shug is whenever I reach out to him to talk about one of his Hall of Famers that, that pass. And he always just says it's part of, they're We get them for, we're lucky for 25 years. So hearts go out to everybody that helped craft an incredibly productive and impactful, as Ed just referenced, career in Awesome Again.
26?
That sounds right. That sounds about right. Let's see. That does sound, it was, yes, yep, exactly. March 29th, born, he was foaled on March 29th, 1994. Deputy minister. And obviously you mentioned Ghost Zapper, but, wow. Ginger Punch, Game On Dude, Round Pond, Oxbow, Painter, Sponge Sugar, Wilco. It's funny. Sid sent me the broodmare compatibility analysis for retiring Carlisle Bell and then also this year's for Voltarine. And Awesome Again figured very prominently in Sid's analysis for Carlisle Bell. Was strongly recommended, had suggestions along the Awesome Again line. All right, well, tomorrow we'll obviously pay tribute, and we'll listen to that 98 Breeders' Cup Classic, and we'll talk to the people who who made his career what it was. Awesome again, Gaon. So, Ed, some thoughts about the past week. You know, we did the we had the Turfway carryover, right, last Wednesday.
Yeah, wow, that seems like a long time.
It seems like
ago.
A month ago.
Yeah,
I know.
I missed the third leg, I think it was. Consos didn't make up for my ticket, but you know, an example of the small takeout plus carryover. There was certainly no horse in there that was impossible. Still paid, I think, $3,100. So. They're paying there, and, you know, some people think it's tough, and there have been a few winners that, you know, I probably wouldn't have had, no matter how many I would have used, if not all. But, you know, they have 40, I think it was 40% favorite percentage. I posted that earlier for the month of December by track. It's actually a profitable if you just bet the favorites, flat bet the favorites, you'd be up for the meet. So I definitely encourage people not to be too swayed by some of the chatter about it being a tough track to handicap. It's a tough game, so they're all tough in their own way, but it's logical enough you find the right horses to key off of or to toss, and you can definitely make a nice score there. And I've had fun doing the Zoom videos. Talking about the races there, and certainly looking forward to getting up there when it's all said and done. But for now, it's been a good way to interact with fans.
Oh, no doubt. And the field size, we've talked about this repeatedly. I mean, the field size has been robust, to say the least. And tomorrow, just looking ahead, for instance, you got an 8-race card tomorrow, and that includes a $33,000. Second level, or not a second level, but a non-winners of two allowance, going short, group of nine. You got, the late pick four tomorrow, 12 by nine by nine by 12. I mean, it's, you know, it's impossible for these returns not to be, you know, solid, just because the number of combinations that are just, there's just too many that to tamp down, the will pay.
And I actually like a couple big prices tomorrow, including first-time starter, I believe, in race six, Philly Race Iris, I believe her name is, 30-1 on the line, which I can't imagine we'll get if the horse, you know, if anyone thinks this horse can run, she won't be 30-1. But there was enough pedigree in there and in a field where I really wasn't wowed. First-time starters haven't done well. I don't know if that's just how they have been trained and it's the end of the year, or if it's the Tapita specifically that's tough on horses who haven't actually, you know, raced at all or what. But at that kind of price, I'm interested.
That's a great name, too, Philly Race Iris.
Yeah. I believe my comment was hopefully it won't break my heart or my bankroll.
But on bump, there are a couple of horses that have run that the favorites 7-2 and 3-1 into vanishing. Jonathan Thomas and Cocktails on Tap as well, 7-2, and they've got a couple of 60 buyers. You've got Ian Wilkes has got General Ginny 12-1. Maker, Sovereign Power, who's had some chances, but you know, these are still 2-year-olds, and so you got stretch outs, you got moves over to the synthetic. Really interesting. It's an interesting set of horsemen that are involved in this race. Actually, you got a little bit of everything.
Seems what December Turfway is all about. The people that make a meet of it. Kind of a layover for others. And I'm glad this jogged my memory. You said horses who have run. And last week, and granted this was on anywhere from 7 to 10 days rest, I believe we had 4 winners last week in week 2 of the meet that had run in week 1. So small sample so far, but might be a trend to get in on in week 3 if the price is right. if the horse has already run at the meet, seemed to be a good sign in week two at the very least.
Well, and that sort of started, or not started, but to a degree, the horse that comes to mind from last week when we went after that sequence was the Humongous One, who, as it turned out, Ed, I mean, you were dead on in terms of being a major lean. I mean, that horse could not have won any more impressively, and that was after blowing the break.
Yeah, that's right. He was last by, I don't know if many's overselling it, but he was out of it and then sort of made that run that to me is usually forget about it, when they rush up after the poor start. But he actually, credit to the jockey, did not rush up immediately after getting into stride. He definitely still surveyed the landscape. And based on the way he won, I'm sure he knew what he had under him, but timed it right and ran off the screen. So a fun name, a fun horse for sure. He lives up to the billing and might be a fun little meat and potatoes horse to follow throughout the meet.
The other part of it that we should revisit is the amount of money that was bet into the thing was, shocking. Nine times the $67,000 carryover. It was $570,000 or so. It was I thought four and a half was going to be big, 400,000, and it beat that by, by almost 50%.
Yeah. No, I think they found a nice spot in the day to day calendar, so to speak. And again, I think I mentioned this last week, but always, a part of the reason is because Golden Gate is not open right now.
True.
That's typically a head-to-head track given Turfway's timing on the East Coast. Always want to temper enthusiasm given they're not open for a not great reason. But nevertheless, I do appreciate them making the most of it. And Mike Ziegler and Chip Bock, responded the first week and said, "Hey, we got some eyes here. Let's make sure we're giving them as much information as possible, et cetera." And I've been happy to step in and help with, some of the social media and the handicapping. So hopefully people who are tuned in for the first time are finding it to their liking. And I have to think anyone who's scored out on some of these pick five and pick four payouts certainly have.
Yeah, it's been very, very worthwhile. I mean, and I mentioned this last Thursday or last Friday because we were off on Thursday, but, I had gotten knocked out in the third leg, but I was real excited in that fifth race about that made the special about betting a Merry Prankster. And so I keyed a Merry Prankster and end up, catching a $400 try. With the three, to me, obvious horses. Kaylee's sister ended up somehow going off after a 7-2 morning line. The Brad Cox goes off at almost 9-1, and actually, I think over 9-1.
Yeah,
and that was crazy.
20, yeah, it's just the type of racing there. I didn't pick the horse, but I think it was 7-2 on the line. And that's another thing. I mean, you just with those big fields, and the new surface, I don't envy Mike Battaglia and his team making the morning line at all. But, you have to watch the board because there's horses I really like at 10-1. They'll go off at 5-2. And I try to talk about this on the feed. I mean, you just have to have prices you're willing to accept and you're going to get beat sometimes. But as important is paying attention to when they drift up, because that absolutely happens, especially with the full fields and maybe people are overbetting the ward, et cetera. And you get a price like that. To me, given those connections, that just might be enough at that price. So you got to be aware in both directions.
Ed, anything else you want to fold in? What do you anticipate leading up? We got a big card at Fairgrounds on Saturday, Friday night, Remington, including Springboard Mile, which is very good. What do you want people to be aware of heading into at least my holiday break?
Yeah, well, I like Senor Buscadero from the rail and the Springboard Mile. Any time a mine shaft's winning a 5.5 furlong race out of the box, I'm going to pay attention. 12-1 may be ambitious, but should be no worse than fourth choice given the Kentucky shippers from the Asmussen and Cox Barn. So I'm pretty keen to give a look to the rail horse there in the Springboard Mile. And then otherwise, I guess happy holidays to all. And Santa Anita, you know, for Bristnet, always been a big track for us with Harrington's workout report and all the information that comes from the marquee SoCal Racing. So plenty of reading material for those who might not be able to go to a movie on Christmas Day or whatever their traditions might be. So, take advantage of that from Bristnet, and most importantly, hope everyone's had a happy holiday season from Thanksgiving to Hanukkah through Christmas and Kwanzaa in the new year.
Ed DeRosa, everybody, EJXD2, Ed, for you and the whole family, Merry Christmas. I'm sure it's mayhem for you guys with the trio, and hope it's wonderful, and we look forward to talking in 2021.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Ed DeRosa, folks, Ed available to all, does just a really wonderful job as you know, an ambassador and you know, as a guide to, you know, those wanting to learn more about the game. So out front and frankly mirthful one of the, you know, people that you can really communicate, interact with in the game, Ed DeRosa. Let's take a break. Last of the morning, we'll come back. Seth Merrow, and you, just because you heard from Seth yesterday, inadvertently, because I slapped on our TV visit, it doesn't mean that Seth's not going to get his chance to wish everybody happy holiday and so forth, right? All right. And plus, we'll get one more Christmas cut. Another reason to take a break. Ed wrapped up with Ed. Looking forward to Seth and closing out the last Wednesday at the races of the year.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The exciting Southern California Thoroughbred Daytime Racing Circuit continues with the LA County Fair Meet at Los Alamitos Racecourse. The meet is off to a great start with strong fields throughout, and the stakes action continues at the Orange County Track headed by the Los Alamitos Futurity on Saturday, December 19th. The Futurity has seen some tremendous winners in years past, like Standouts McKenzie in 2017, Improbable in 2018, and Thousand Words in 2019. Watch and wager on all the great racing action on TVG, plus all other major ADW providers at open satellite locations. On weekdays, our first post will be 1 p.m., while weekends will feature a 12:30 p.m. first post time. Plus, our wagering menu includes a pair of $1 pick fours, a traditional $2 pick six, and the popular 14% players pick five. And as we continue to follow our local guidelines, we'd like to thank all the great racing fans across the nation for their continued support of Los Alamitos Racecourse. Watch and wager on exciting Southern California thoroughbred racing. The LA County Fair Meet at Los Alamitos continues through Sunday, December 20th. For more, visit losalamitos.com.
What'd you do there, Deja? Yeah, I didn't think that was one of ours. That's something else in the system, right?
Christmas is coming.
Okay. Okay.
It's been a long year. We're still in the same place. We're still over here. Go down in a market. Get lost in the crowd. Go home to my records. I'm playing too loud. Christmas is coming.
This is the third song that that Pete was going to play, so it's good that we got it in. And this is the Paolas, and I've heard this a couple of times. I haven't heard it yet this year. Christmas is coming. It's a nice song, and Pete's right. That was a good tie-in about what a tough year it's been. Good job. Christmas is coming by the Paolas. I'll put the link up. Wish you were here. Seth Merrow is here, and this is a rare two visits in 1 week from Seth, because even though you weren't live yesterday, you were on the show.
And you said you texted that you put the segment on. That was a good segment we did Sunday, so I'm glad you reused it to kind of toss out the, because your suggestions were very good, and so hopefully people got a little bit out of the segment. And Two visits in 1 week. You can't have too much of me, can you? It's not possible.
Well, and then this really justifies your Twitter name, Seth Merrow 2.
There you go. Excellent. I like the tie-in. Christmas Seth. Music leading in. As you were playing that, I was thinking, and I was watching Jimmy Fallon last night. He was talking to the British talk show host, but they were talking about Christmas songs, and he was bringing up some obscure. It seems like I'm not an expert on the music industry, but it seems like if you are around long enough, everybody has to put out a Christmas song. I mean, you know, you got John Lennon and Christmas, and then you got, you know, the Pogues, and everybody sticks in a Christmas song somewhere in their archive.
I think you and I may have to consider one. A Loose on the Lead Christmas.
I like that. And speaking of that, when we were texting yesterday, I mentioned we're putting together a best of for Capital TV TV. Mick's putting together some of the shows from Saratoga. And I said the first one everybody mentioned was the Matisse brothers, because that's hilarious. When we had Paul and, you know, we have Paul and Duke every year, and usually they're sitting next to us. This year we had to do them virtually, and we introduced Paul, and he immediately said, "Hey, Merry Christmas," because he said Christmas Day every year he gets a bunch of texts because we replay the Saratoga show every year at Christmas, and so he was kind of using the crystal ball to get in the swing of things. So that will be in the rotation on Christmas Day.
That it was absolutely hysterical. That he had the presence of mind to acknowledge that, and so it'll make everybody laugh when they tune in. And it's funny because Duke was on. Was that that was Monday? I reached out to Paul over the weekend because of the two horses that they ran. They won the graded stake with Ladies Island, and then the other big claimer, of course, Pay Any Price. And so I had to get, you know, either Rich Averill or you know, one of the Matisses on. And it was funny because Paul said, "Well," he goes, "I can't do it because I didn't go." He said, "If I do it and as if I had gone, that's not going to go over well with Rich and Duke." So I grabbed Duke, and he stood in. They had a big weekend, you know, to win a. It's amazing. And I said to him, I said, how does this stack up in the pantheon of claims? And obviously these two horses, Seth, I mean, they basically offset years of claimers that didn't do much.
Yeah, and I thought that was Duke in the winner's circle. You know, with the masks, it was hard to tell, but it looked like Duke and Rich Averill. So I'm glad somebody was down there to celebrate. And I talked about, we did the stakes preview last week for Capital OTB and talked a little bit about that race. And I mentioned Ladies Island, and I mentioned it again in the afternoon when I was on. And I said, man, going back to the Honor Roll miss up at Saratoga, I was playing one of those Naira contests that day. And had she hung on, I would have been in a money position. So it kind of hurt to go back and handicap a little bit and have to look at that again. But just got run down late in that Honor Roll miss by Come Dancing. But she looked really good on Saturday, though, winning the Sugar Swirl down at Gulfstream. So congratulations to Rich Averill and the Matisse brothers with the nice win.
Let me turn the stage over to you. Your year-end thoughts, Seth, and you chronicling obviously with your role as the face of GoTV. You had to chronicle and make the best of things on air during an extended period of limited racing. Talk a little bit about 2020 from your perspective.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I was driving in because I was expecting, maybe a little year-end recap. And the thing that stuck out to me, and I've said it a few times over the past, six, 7 months now, I think racing did a good job of continuing as compared to some of the other sports. I mean, if we look back over the past few months at, professional and college football and basketball, we've seen a lot of cancellations or delays or whatnot. Racing has been pretty good. There have been a couple of stops and starts due to COVID, but for the most part, things have continued on pretty much normally in that the races are running. It's not normal on track, but we can watch and wager from home or on our devices or whatever and kind of enjoy the races. And I said a bunch of times during Saratoga in particular, I said it's kind of a shame that this is a year where we don't have fans available on track, because I thought overall it was a pretty good year almost in all the divisions as it played along. And Saratoga certainly played that out with their stakes and prominent names getting it done there. And so, again, it was kind of unfortunate that fans weren't there. Tis the law in the Travers. I remember there was some folks out on Union Avenue Nelson kind of applauding as he won the race and then came around the clubhouse turn. So folks kind of got a little slice of it, and it was kind of fun to watch that. But as I say, overall, I thought the racing industry did a pretty good job of holding it together and continuing, and they continue to do so. And now, we have a light at the end of the tunnel, and so hopefully by the time we get to, late spring, early summer, things will be back to some semblance of normal, and hopefully, certainly by Saratoga, we're back to a little more of a normal situation. But it was very, it was surreal. I spent the summer up there doing the morning shows. You came in on Sundays, and so you saw some of it too. But I would go over in the afternoon and sit in the makeshift temporary press box as they spread people out. The regular press box was in use, but they also spread some people out in the third floor dining room. And it was very different with no fans there. And, great that the racing kept going, and as I say, high quality racing, but missed the fans this year, no question about it.
Well, that's because everybody fawns all over you. Oh, Seth, hey, Seth,
I will say it is kind of fun during the Saratoga season to get some level of recognition. But I always say to people, I'm still like three rungs below the local weatherman.
Well, I guess because you have sort of a finite audience, but at the racetrack, everybody knows you, and it's fun to walk around you. And I tell you what's funny, the thing that seems to, for whatever reason, seems to have resonated more than of all the things we've done together on TV. Which of course mostly entails me, ridiculing and making fun of your wardrobe, which people love. It's some of the greatest shtick ever. But the cream cheese, no jelly. It's unbelievable how much that seems to have just been ingrained in people's heads.
That's right. I forgot about that. Yes, you're right, that got a lot of reaction. You're absolutely right. Yeah. And then it became a commercial, right? Didn't we?
Yes.
Yeah. I had forgotten about that. You're right. That did get a lot of reaction. Cream, surprisingly.
People will point at me and they'll go, cream cheese, no jelly. We're talking about bagels, and I basically was just deriding anybody that puts jelly on a bagel. I mean, you want to wear a billboard that says, you know, not a Jew. Put jelly on your bagel. And it is Hanukkah, so a good chance to reference Adam Sandler in the Hanukkah song, O.J. Simpson, not a Jew. one of the great moments. But you know who is Hall of Famer? Rod Carew. oh boy. All right, I've steered the boat right into the rocks.
You're taking the break just in time. So you're going to be off 2 weeks. You're not back to the beginning of the year.
2 weeks. Yes.
Ah, nice. Deserved.
Thank you. I in some years we might have done Monday and Tuesday, but I said to Ken, you know, Casey, you know, it's for Case too, a chance to, you know, to take time. You know, he continues to, you know, face treatments, and so 2 weeks will be. We got the baby coming. The baby's coming, Seth. You got to see the baby.
Ah, very nice. So coming for the holidays, and nice.
The baby will dominate. I think certainly the social media postings. You're going to see a lot of baby Lennon. She is something, actually. She started to crawl this week, and she can now, you know, stand herself. Forget about it. She can stand herself up. So, you know, Tina downstairs is like, you know, she's like baby proofing the house. There can't be anything with a corner that the baby might hit its head. And I mean, it's just crazy.
If she's crawling around and can stand up by herself, yeah, I guess you're at that point where you do have to. Yeah, check the house for those kind of situations.
Well, it's all new to me, essentially. I mean, it's a new experience, but we're looking forward to having. They were here once this summer. Somehow, Tina has felt obligated to re-outfit the entire house. There's nothing that's in the house that they don't have back in Rochester, which includes play pens and play mats. And there's a high chair coming today. There's the bouncy bounce. There's, it's every single day. I think the UPS guy is going to buy into DT. Is going to buy into the guy. I've seen this guy more. I've seen him almost as often as Tina herself, actually. It's unbelievable.
Very good. Speaking of which, I mailed out some Christmas packages to my relatives the past couple of days. I will warn people, if you haven't yet mailed your packages, get them out there because, man, I went to the Malta post office a couple of days ago. There was a line out the door, and then yesterday I was at the Boston Spa post office, and there was a line. At least it was inside, though, but mail the packages because the post office is crowded.
Well, and I've seen all the issues that the delivery services, FedEx and UPS apparently have asked. They asked what? They asked Amazon. They asked Macy's and a couple of other outlets to put the brakes that they were at capacity in terms of delivery. I think there's stuff that's been delayed on that front too, just by the sheer volume, and I'm sure the post office has been equally overwhelmed. The good advice, actually, because what are we 9 days out?
Yeah. That's why, you know, normally I would wait. Normally I would wait till like a couple days before, but I was getting the warnings on the TV news, so I went and did it at the beginning of the week.
What'd
so
you get
hopefully
me?
I'm covered.
Hmm? What did you get me?
I didn't hear what you said.
What did you get me for Christmas? For Hanukkah?
Oh, well, what do you want?
Oh boy, there you go, folks. This is what I deal with year round. I sent him a beautiful Maine calendar. I specifically got this artist, this litho artist that we discovered at the Big E last year from Maine.
It was very nice. It was very nice.
All right, well, it's the last one. It's the last one you're going to get. tell you that.
All right. Okay.
I'm kidding. You don't have to get me anything. I have everything I could want. In fact, I've got more presents because, of course, you know, it's not Christmas if you don't get 8 or 10 of my old ties. So a sack of ties, is on its way, I'm sure, as well.
I am wearing one currently because a little bit later, Mick and I are going to tape intros to the holiday best of. So when I put one on this morning, it's clearly one of yours because it is way too flashy to have been one of mine. I have said many times, I'm pretty much the solid color, maybe some stripes, but this one has kind of a paisley action going, which it's good. It's good looking. I'm glad I added it to my collection. I'm glad you added it to my collection.
Seth will be doing those intros from his car. You and James Corden, basically, you're taking a page from the Corden playbook. Did you look at Tampa today?
I did look at Tampa today.
I knew you did. I knew I could. That was a safe harbor.
Absolutely. And I'll just turn. Yeah, we can look at maybe the late pick four. How's that sound?
All right, you got yourself 3 minutes, 2.5, 3 minutes.
Right. Okay, we'll zip through. Six races at Tampa, 16 claimers. I went 2, 5, 8, and 4. The Kurt Fox, 6-1 on the morning line. Kathy Gucciardo and Antonio Gallardo with a horse that I think fits with this group. Put in a race at Tampa a little bit earlier and moved down from Presque Isle and ran third. May benefit from that and move forward. But I thought the 6-1 price, a little bit playable. The Silent Jet, maybe a little more logical with Santino on board, comes down from Woodbine, but I think is a solid fit with this bunch. And then Hot and Heavy in the third spot. Another one I think just going to come over from the east coast of the state for Antonio Siano and run well with this group. And you're getting 8-1 there. So 6 to Tampa, 2, 5, 8, and 4. The seventh race at Tampa, 8, 10, 6, and 11. The number 8, Tony Small. Sappy Joseph brings this one over from the East Coast, and Sammy Camacho gets on board, so you have some potent connections there. Federal Case in the second spot. Hasn't been seen since May, but the Mike Stidham horse, if comes back fit, may run well, gets a little class relief on the return. And then in the third spot, First Decree comes off a N2L win last time, moves up a condition, but on the way the horse did it last time, I think is going to fit with this bunch, even moving up the condition today. The eighth race, 7, 6, and 2. Obi-Wan on top, Sammy Camacho riding a horse that won last time. Again, one of those N2Ls to N3L moves, but did it in a fashion last time on the move down to Tampa that says probably is not going to be stalled too much by this condition and gets, again, Camacho on board. That's a bonus. Valiant Virtue is clearly a player in the mix more often than not this year. And Kitten Spa, a close-up finish last time, right behind Valiant Virtue. And then in the finale this afternoon, race number 9, I have 9, 6, 10, and 8. Our Tenderelli for Avil Racing. Georgina Baxter trains. They had a nice debut winner, Georgina Baxter and Avil Racing and Company, at Gulfstream on Sunday. Horse took a lot of action, so if this horse does get a little bit of action, that's maybe a good sign. But the first was Sammy Camacho, our Tenderoni on top. One Luck Girl at 10-1, another first-time starter, and it just looks like a field where maybe you can go for a fresh face. So that one in the mix, and of those that have run, Kinky Frolic for Sappy Joseph looks good. So the ninth to Tampa, 9, 6, 10, and 8.
Excellent. Actually, a nice sequence, and cards have been good at Tampa, and certainly with the snow coming, we will be looking south the next couple of days. I don't think we're gonna see too much racing tomorrow.
It seems unlikely if these predictions are, I mean, up here we're supposed to, now they're talking, you know, 8 to 14 or over, and you guys, your county was on the National Weather Service warning that went across my TV screen this morning.
I saw that. And Tina surprised me when she was leaving. She said, what time is the snow starting? I said, what are you talking about? It's on the eastern, it's on the coast. She said, She goes, there's going to be... So I looked, and I was like, "Oh my God! They're talking, they're talking a foot of snow." So I told everybody to start the show. I've got to go. I'm glad you reminded me. Before she comes home, I got to go get the snowblower, get it primed, and make sure that it's got gas and it starts when she demands that it start.
That first time of the season, it's always a little dicey, but once you get it going, you're good to go for the year.
Exactly. Seth Merrow, everybody. Seth Merrow, too, on your Twitter machine and on your Capital OTB screen channel 1250. Seth, thanks for a great year. We'll talk to you January 6th.
Sounds good. We'll talk to you then.
Seth Merrow, everybody, and kind of a fun and frolicky Wednesday get together, last Wednesday of the year. Thanks to Seth and Ed and Sid and Pete. Deja on the board. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. Back tomorrow, Thursday, 9 o'clock, SiriusXM. If you missed anything, SteveBick.com. And right here, 6 to 9 tomorrow. Talk to you then.